The ever-ongoing process of discovery in science and technology marches forward, as always, to close out 2024 with some highly interesting developments. So here are 10 interesting scientific discoveries for December of 2024. Number 10. Using asteroids to go to Mars. One ever-present problem in space is dangerous radiation of various types to astronauts. It's not just the jungle out there. It would be fatal to the jungle, and be worse. The problem is twofold: cosmic radiation from space itself, and radiation from the sun. Mitigating this threat for astronauts requires shielding, which usually takes the form of shielded safe rooms in space stations like the ISS or in large spacecraft. And we have materials that effectively can shield astronauts. Lead is good, but heavy. But the astronauts' water supply is a really good one. Surround yourself with water and there you go. But there is another option. These shielding systems, however, are imperfect, and astronauts do not spend their entire time within them. And the whole thing is problematic, meaning that a trip to Mars dramatically increases the chances for astronauts to develop cancer later in life after their trip. They would not immediately get sick from the trip, but it would cost later. The problem is, more shielding is good, but it means more mass to launch into space for us right now. But there is mass in space already that can be used, and it's the asteroids. Some of these asteroids, actually about 120, have been identified that pass close enough to both Earth and Mars on a 2 to 3 year time frame going to Mars, making the trip in less than a year. And then a second asteroid could be employed in windows for a return trip. The benefit is as much shielding as you could possibly want if you are within the interior or have built large thick structures on the surface of the asteroid from its materials. This is a tricky proposition, to be sure. Matching the speed of an asteroid enough to land on it is doable. We've done it, but it's not easy. The idea of drilling a hole in an asteroid that could accommodate a spacecraft, or building structures on it or within the asteroid, is a very ambitious thing on a level comparable to small-scale outpost colonization on a planet. Here it's colonizing an asteroid, and the facilities would likely be intended for repeated use. But it's an interesting concept for sure. Tough, but maybe not in a century. Number 9. Resurrection of the Thylacine. De-extinction has been on the agenda for some time by certain groups. From the mammoth to the thylacine, otherwise known as the Tasmanian tiger, there has been extensive talk about bringing back past species. Some say, such as with the mammoth, that this may not be such a good idea, and efforts there really involve back engineering a mammoth using a modern elephant to give birth to it. Might look like a mammoth, but how authentic would it be? And how good of an idea would it be to release it from the zoo? With the thylacine, however, it's a bit different because they've only been extinct since 1936, and there's still reports that they never did go completely extinct and still roam Tasmania in small numbers. Regardless, these animals were walking this planet within living memory, though maybe just barely at this point, and probably aren't going to be a problem if brought back, at least under controlled conditions. The world's ecosystems and such have not moved on that much in comparison to an Ice Age mammoth. Of course, I say that now, and in 30 years, you may hear me on this channel alarmed that North America is being overrun by rampaging, artificially resurrected thylacines that escaped from a zoo, and I may have to issue a correction on my views. They're back, and they're angry, as it were. But the thylacine has taken a step closer to becoming a reality once again. A company specializing in de-extinction claims that they now have 99.9% of the thylacine genome reconstructed, and it will complete it fairly soon when they fill in the remaining 45 gaps. Basically, a large section of the genome was retrieved from a thylacine pouch preserved in alcohol, and the gaps were filled in recently regarding DNA from a tooth. Genomes are notoriously difficult to nail down completely. The human genome took decades to get the last few gaps in place, and we're still alive and well. So an extinct animal is much harder, even with a recently extinct one. And once you get it, it's not yet possible to actually build the organism. You have to make an existing organism more like a thylacine and work from there. So ultimately, it's an exercise in recreating traits of past animals and then going from there with further gene editing to make something closer to a thylacine that is effectively a thylacine. And there you go. That's with current technology. With advancements, greater control over de-extinction, or the creation of species that never did exist in nature, comes onto the table. Number 8. Breakthrough in nanogears. Nanotechnology has for many decades been a subject in futurism and to a degree science fiction, though there is still plenty of room there for more hard sci-fi stories, hint hint, because the field holds certain potentials for technological development that would make for a very different world than we have now, a very futuristic one, that if successfully implemented could very easily change humanity on a scale even larger than the development of artificial generalized intelligence. That's right, there is room there for an even bigger shift in what we are than AI promises, which says a lot. To give you a thought experiment, this is a very old idea, but it will give you a picture of what nanotechnology can, in principle, do in the far future. The idea originates from John Storrs Hall in 1989, and it involves a cloud, termed utility fog, that could fill a car and replace seatbelts as safety devices. The idea is that microscopic machines that have arms that reach in different directions, the arms can lock together during an impact, hold together like a kind of foam, but not really since it allows air to move freely. It would just hold whatever is in the car static during the impact, spreading the shock of the impact evenly through the driver, thus, hopefully, saving their life. There are many other avenues for nanotechnology to go down, ranging from medical science to even things like radio astronomy and creating giant telescopes out of nanotechnological robots. But getting to that promised technology is still only in its first steps. And now there has been a development. Building very tiny gears has been possible for a while, even nearly down to the scale of atoms. A new technique for cutting nanogears has come to light that can be made at less than the thickness of a human hair in diameter. Not a huge development in its own right. However, it gets past one major issue with nanotechnological gears. How to power something that tiny. This has been the challenge because it requires some way to shrink the power source as well. With these new gears, however, it's possible. They are powered by light through a two-dimensional metasurface, as it's known, that reacts and moves when it is struck with light, thus providing the power for a larger gear system. This will probably make its first debut in medical science, in the study of how cells are influenced by mechanical forces from the nanogear apparatus. Number 7. Marine life snacking on Sahara dust. This entry illustrates perfectly the reality of just how complicated Earth is. So imagine the scenario recently discovered by researchers, reporting in the journal Frontiers in Marine Science. So the Sahara Desert is subject to winds that blow dust deep out into the Atlantic Ocean. This effect is so marked that dust can actually be brought from the Sahara into the Gulf of Mexico entirely across the Atlantic Ocean. And there is an air layer that sometimes has dust of hot, dry air that overlays the humid air just above the ocean. All of this affects the weather patterns of the Atlantic and even the Gulf of Mexico. But what happens to that dust has turned out to be more interesting than had been previously known. So the dust undergoes chemical reactions while it's in the air that alter the iron-based minerals in the dust into more water-soluble forms. This makes iron, which can be somewhat scarce in oceanic environments distant from land, available to marine phytoplankton, which is important in photosynthesis. When the dust settles onto the ocean, these phytoplankton bloom. It turns out that the Sahara, on average, supplies about 240 million metric tons of dust across the Atlantic, into areas too far to get much iron from the river systems on land. And it goes up the food chain. In the areas where the dust settles, skipjack tuna, a common type found in cans everywhere, congregate. But this isn't the only source for iron in the isolated areas of the oceans. Wildfires can deliver it too, and may be having the same effect. And it has to be said, the Sahara isn't that old. It began well less than 10 million years ago. One wonders what happened before then in the waters around the African continent. Number 6. Uranus may not be as strange as we thought. In 1986, Uranus's magnetic field was measured by Voyager 2 to be lopsided and not really like any other planetary magnetic field in the solar system. It just wasn't aligned with the planet's rotation as expected. It was seen to be unusually enriched in energetic electrons, and did not have the usual plasma that's common with gas giants and ice giants in the solar system. At the time, the instruments on Voyager were called into question, even though they appeared to be functioning normally. And all sorts of unusual physics was invoked, but to no avail. But the answer may have been simpler than that. We might have caught Uranus at an unusual time. Researchers at JPL have reanalyzed the Voyager 2 findings, and it may actually have been that the planet Uranus at the time of the measurement was being hit by a relatively unusual burst in the solar wind that crushed its magnetic field just before Voyager arrived on the scene, giving a skewed view of the situation to Voyager. This actually explains some stuff but invokes something else, including the lack of plasma and the abundant electrons. And interestingly, part of this might be because some of Uranus's moons might not have been as inert as was assumed, and may in fact be more geologically active than had been thought at the time of the experiment, altering the situation with the planet's magnetic field. This actually bolsters the evidence for subsurface oceans on some of Uranus's moons, something that has increasingly been suspected in recent years. Number 5. Injured comb jellies can merge. When talking about Earth life, astonishing is an ever-present word. But this one hits high on that list. Comb jellies apparently can get injured and merge with each other and heal, leading to a double organism. Comb jellies actually aren't jellyfish as we usually see them. They actually are anatomically different and distant relatives, but look similar in some cases. They actually are a very primitive creature, and indeed are the earliest known species to branch from the common ancestors of all animals on Earth. But they actually do seem to have an ability that we do not. They can merge, so their nervous systems are such that they seem to be able to network together instead of total separation in most other animals, and lack an ability to reject interacting with a foreign organism of the same species, meaning that when two damaged individuals came together in the right way, they could merge together without their immune systems rejecting the other, essentially working out to two organisms merging into one. And it apparently worked well with the nervous systems of the two organisms working in unison, apparently seamlessly in a synchronized way. What this suggests is that early, complex life was far more plastic than what we typically see today, and could adapt in ways that life now cannot. Maybe this is a clue that early complex life on Earth had wider advantages than what is present now, even in more complex species, that might have favored the proliferation of marine life on Earth early on. And the comb jellyfish is a holdout. But that conditions changed sufficiently over Earth's existence to now disfavor this to a degree. But at the same time, figuring out how biology does this could lead to huge medical advances in the future, a hint at what may be possible. Number 4. The Steamworld Exoplanet. We only have the examples of possible planets and moons in the solar system that we have, but we do not have all that is possible as far as atmospheric makeups and conditions. Indeed, there could be all sorts of different combinations and conditions we don't even know exist yet, but we can at least imagine. One such case was a world where hypothetically it may be water-bearing, but too hot to hold on to that water as a liquid, but enough to hold on to it as water vapor, a gas, and now we've found one. GJ9827D orbits a star about 100 light-years away that has an atmosphere that is almost exclusively made up of water molecules, as discovered by researchers at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, using the James Webb Telescope. This is one of the all-important cases of transiting exoplanets that pass in front of their stars, allowing light to pass through their atmospheres that James Webb can characterize. Here it was combined with Hubble data, and the planet was found to be hot, 340 degrees Celsius, which would make water vapor, no oceans here, but essentially be called a steam world, though steam actually isn't the right scientific word, more like water vapor world. But regardless, do not land on this world. It's beyond boiling hot. But if you were an alien or a far future human looking for water vapor in abundance, there it is. Number 3. The Unexplained International Space Station Antimatter. This is a weird one and may point to new physics and confirm some ideas, including dark matter as a weakly interacting massive particle, or WIMP, that is talked about so much. So researchers in Spain at the Autonomous University in Madrid analyzed 15 years of data from the ISS, that showed that the station's Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer, or AMS-02 instrument, had measured more antimatter particles than it should have. This experiment detects cosmic rays, and seeing antimatter in reactions is not unusual, but not quite like this, because it even included helium nuclei, but it was anti-helium. It turns out that colliding WIMPs with each other should produce something like this effect in some models, but not quite exactly, meaning that this would hint at something even more complex going on with dark matter, which is entirely possible. We don't know anything about this stuff other than its gravitational interactions, and a few hints from peripheral things, like these anti-helium nuclei, if that's what's causing them. The bottom line here is that to determine where these particles of antimatter are coming from is going to require more measurements to constrain exactly what happened here, but it may represent a foothold into understanding more about dark matter, or just particle interactions we may not understand as much as we thought we did. Number 2, bacteria on the ISS are evolving for orbit. This one is a little scary, so life finds a way, as it is said. The International Space Station is not sterile. Humans full of bacteria go there, supplies full of bacteria go there, and spacecraft and modules full of bacteria are already there. And this has gone on for years. About a decade ago, NASA began intensively studying the microbiome of the station to see what exactly is going on. Part of the reason for this is that bacteria can become more dangerous here on Earth when their conditions change, such as antibiotic resistance is doing in some cases, and that might eventually be dangerous for astronauts. Lo and behold! In the course of that study, it has become clear that certain bacteria on the ISS have developed, evolved, increased resistance to radiation and weightlessness. This ranges from the production of proteins that help cope with microgravity and increased ability to repair their genetic code after radiation damage. They don't seem to be affecting the astronauts right now, but some of the genetic evolutionary shifts observed do show increased pathogenic ability in the form of apparently advanced ability to evade and damage the human immune system. It's not a problem yet, but it's also unclear what threats are here. It's also been observed that these bacteria can form biofilms on the interior of the station, and that the astronauts need to enhance efforts to control moisture in the station. If it turns out that someone gets sick from this, there are also indicators that the organisms could be developing genetic traits that might benefit medicine, and may actually hold implications on long-term space flights and how sanitary concerns will need to be handled, and may even eventually factor into the retiring and deorbiting of the ISS. I'll have a full video exploring this further soon, in addition to hopefully an Event Horizon interview with one of the scientists involved. This is something to pay attention to. Number 1. The oldest known rock to host microbes. This one makes number 1 because of a spooky reason. Subsurface Earth life is very odd. We know that life exists deep into the crust of the Earth. So far, the deepest measured presence of microbial life is just under 5 kilometers below the surface. Some of this life represents the progeny of some of the earliest life on Earth, and can exist in extreme slow motion, with isolated microbial colonies growing so slowly that they take thousands or even millions of years to complete the process of cell division. Up until now, the oldest rock known to maintain microbial activity is a sedimentary rock about 100 million years old. But now a 2 billion year old rock core taken in South Africa wins out. This is actually igneous rock, which means it's uncertain how these microorganisms are surviving. And it needs to be made clear that the microorganisms themselves are not 2 billion years old, just that their colony overall might have that long of a history. What might have happened is that the lava rock solidified, but was then exposed to water, which clogged the fissures in the rock with clay and the microbes, and they colonized. These microorganisms are extremely primitive anaerobes. They don't need oxygen, and may represent a snapshot of what microbial life was like 2 billion years ago, because the colony appears to have formed not long after the rock, and has sustained itself off the clay nutrients ever since, and can provide clues on life at much earlier stages here on Earth, but there is also a somewhat spooky attribute to this. So the situation of basaltic rock with clay deposited in microfissures by water is not unique to Earth. This has also been seen in some of the Martian meteorites, where the same thing happened. If that kind of an environment could sustain a 2-billion-year-old microbial colony, then the same thing below the surface of Mars could be doing this as well. And here's the kicker. The clay-filled fissures in the Mars rock are the locations where the controversial claim of microfossils that might represent evidence of past life on Mars were found. Thanks for listening. I'm futurist and science fiction author John Michael Godier, currently concerned about comb jellies. Yeah, interesting creatures, but merging nervous systems? That seems like it could get out of hand, and a comb jelly superintelligence could form up and become an issue in the future. Maybe that's the solution to the Fermi paradox. It's all fun and games with a civilization until a giant, overwhelming superintelligence forms up in the ocean from analogs of the comb jellies. Chilling. And be sure to check out my books at your favorite online book retailer and subscribe to my channels for regular in-depth explorations into the interesting, weird, and unknown aspects of this amazing universe in which we live.